Good morning.
Good morning.
It's 9 o'clock, so we're going to go ahead and get started. I got the camera rolling here, and we're into, as always, we got a lot of ground to cover, so I want to get right into things. Okay. So you should have in front of you on the table a set of notes for lesson 101, Erasmus and the Greek New Testament, part 2, and the sort of subtitle on this is Erasmus and the Critic's Den. Okay. So last week in lesson 100, we began looking at Erasmus in the Greek New Testament as a monumental achievement in the history of preservation / transmission. Somebody's at the door.
Oh.
You're not allowed in. So yeah, we're on point one. Last week in lesson 100, we began looking at Erasmus and the Greek New Testament as a monumental achievement in the history of preservation / transmission. And in doing so, we covered the following points, okay? So we looked at the following points last Sunday. Number one, we looked at the life and career of Erasmus. And then second, we looked at Erasmus and the Greek New Testament, okay? I'm not going to repeat all that stuff here today, other than just to remind you that a few of the things that we said were that the main purpose of it was not necessarily to publish the New Testament in Greek as much as it was to publish his own translation of the Latin, okay? And that he provided the Greek and the annotations for the purposes of justifying his Latin translations against the Latin Vulgate, okay? So today what we want to do is build upon this groundwork by considering the following points. And like I said a moment ago, I subtitled this Erasmus and the Critic's Den. And we want to look at are some arguments that are made, some criticisms that are made against Erasmus. And there's three of them primarily that we're going to look at this morning. Number one is what I'm calling the rush to press argument. Second is the number of manuscripts argument. And then third is the age of the manuscripts and awareness of variant readings argument. Now those aren't, I need to have better names for those, but that's what I got at this point, okay? And then, Sylvia, we can strike from this lesson that next open bullet, reception and additions. We're going to look at that next time, okay, in the next lesson. So this is what we want to look at is Erasmus and the Critic's Den. So let's get right into that point with the first bullet, okay? Critics of the King James Bible, the Textus Receptus, and the traditional Byzantine Greek deride the text of Erasmus for a variety of reasons, okay? So these would be folks that are proponents of the modern critical text, okay? And therefore, the most advocates for modern versions. Alistair McGrath, a supporter of the critical text and modern versions, reports, quote, Erasmus had access to a mere 5 manuscripts for most of the New Testament.
Four.
Okay. I can't read. Erasmus had access to a mere 4 manuscripts for most of the New Testament, and only 1 for the final part. That's why I said 5, I subconsciously, anyway, sorry. And only 1 for the final part of the book of Revelation. So notice first how he says that. He only has access to a mere what?
4
and then 5, right? So that's obviously a criticism, right? That Erasmus doesn't have many texts available to him, okay? As it happened, that manuscript left out 5 verses. So that would be the one for Revelation, which Erasmus himself had to translate into Greek from the Latin Vulgate. Nevertheless, it proved to be a literary milestone. For the first time, theologians had the opportunity of comparing the Greek text of the New Testament with the later Vulgate translation into Latin. Okay? So he's noting that in his mind there are some criticisms. Number one, the number of manuscripts that Erasmus is using. And number two, one of them isn't complete for the book of Revelation, and so McGrath says that he's having to back-translate out of Latin, okay? Dr. William W. Combs of Detroit Baptist Theological Seminary maintains that Erasmus used 7 Greek manuscripts to construct his Greek New Testament as opposed to the 5 noted by McGrath. So here we see a disagreement between folks over how many Erasmus actually had access to, okay? So I'm just saying that to you as a point of fact that you note that, okay? Combs says the following, quote, 7 manuscripts were used by Erasmus in Bethel to compile the Greek text that was printed alongside his Latin translation. Okay, so now I've given these to you in all of their, you know, specific glory, okay? So let's just, you've got different codexes. Let's just look at number 1. This is a minuscule, meaning it's written in all lowercase Greek characters, containing the entire text of the New Testament except Revelation from about the 12th century. The second is a minuscule containing the book of Revelation except for the last six verses, dated from the 12th century. On the top page two, the third one is a codex, again a minuscule, containing the Gospels dated to the 12th century. Number four was a codex of minuscules containing Acts and the Epistles, dated to the 12th century. Number five was a minuscule containing the Pauline Epistles, dated to the 15th century. Six, a minuscule containing the Pauline Epistles, dated to the 11th century. And seven, a codex containing the Gospels, a minuscule containing the Gospels, dated to the 15th century. Okay? So, are any one of those seven wholly complete New Testaments?
Probably not.
Not according to what we know. Okay? So not one of them is wholly complete from Matthew to the book of Revelation for the New Testament. Okay? And then he finishes up and he says, all of these were the property of the Dominican Library and Vessel, except for 2 AP, which was obtained from the family of Johann Ambroth of Vessel. Okay? So Combs is stating that he's got these five available to him from which to construct the Greek New Testament. Okay? So one guy says there's five, the other guy says there's seven. So just make a note of that. Dr. W. Edward Glennie of Central Baptist Theological Seminary is emblematic of those who seek to deride the Greek text, Greek New Testament of Erasmus. Glennie contributed two essays to the 1997 publication of Central Baptist Theological Seminary titled The Bible Version Debate, The Perspective of Central Theological Seminary. In chapter 4, defining our terms, Glennie states the following regarding Erasmus and the text and the received text. He says, quote, the Textus Receptus described below, which only represents about a half a dozen manuscripts of the Byzantine text type. Okay? The Textus Receptus is the title given to the 1633 version of the Greek text, edited and first published by Erasmus in 1516. Erasmus was a Roman Catholic humanist who came to Vessel in 1514 for the purpose of publishing his annotations on the New Testament with the text of the Latin Vulgate. I think he misunderstands there what Erasmus was doing from what we learned last week. His publisher, Froben, pressed him to include the Greek New Testament in his work. Consequently, in 8 months, Erasmus edited his Greek New Testament based on seven manuscripts available to him at Vessel. So there's two issues there. He does it in how much time? 8 months out of only how many manuscripts? Seven, okay? Erasmus described his text as, quote, thrown together rather than edited. Of the seven manuscripts which Erasmus used, none contained the whole New Testament. One was complete except for Revelation, and all the rest had various parts of the New Testament. One had Revelation except for the last six verses. Two had only the Gospels, two had only Acts and the Epistles, and one had only the Pauline Epistles. So that lines up with what we saw in the previous point, right? All from the 11th to 15th centuries. So there's their third issue, right? There's few of them, it's done fast, and they're not old enough. Okay? Is everybody with me on that? Okay? So there's three issues here. The time involved, the number of manuscripts, and the age of the manuscripts. Does everybody see that? Okay, that's a summary of what we just went through, okay? Next paragraph, still in the quote from Glennie. As a result of his editing of these seven manuscripts in 1516, Erasmus produced a new Greek text which had never existed before. Remember, the closest manuscripts differ from each other 6 to 10 times per chapter. And then I inserted this. Note that Glennie says nothing about the nature of these differences. Okay? He's not telling you whether they're substantive differences or whether they're just different ways of saying what? The same thing. He's just saying there's 6 to 10 variants per chapter and so forth, right? He took the manuscripts which he had available from different parts of the New Testament and edited them to make a new text. He used two main manuscripts and wrote his corrections and changes on them, and the printer then used them to make the printed text. A comparison of Erasmus' notes and his 1516 edition of the TR shows that at times the printer did not accept Erasmus' corrections, and other times the printer made revisions not made by Erasmus. The TR then is only, notice the statement, the TR is only based on 7 late what? Manuscripts. Okay, so let's just stop there for a minute. So what are the main objections here? Number one is, there's not enough time, he does this in how much time?
8 months.
8 months, okay? Objection, so this would be objection number one. Objection number two would be the number of manuscripts that he has available to him, how many?
Seven,
okay? Number three would be the age of these manuscripts because they date from the 11th through the 15th what?
Century,
okay? So these are the main criticisms that are going to be leveled against Erasmus and his text, okay? We'll pause here in a minute for any questions or comments. And then I'm going to add another thing here. Glennie is saying that he's objected to this because it is what? Edited. Okay? So is Erasmus using these 7 manuscripts to produce a complete Greek New Testament?
I guess, yes.
Shake your head yes, because that's what he did. Okay? So look at the next page 3. Regarding the situation with publication of the 1516 Greek text of Erasmus, Dr. William Combs paints a slightly different picture than did Glennie. Combs states, quote, "Thus Erasmus had 3 manuscripts of the Gospels and Acts, 4 manuscripts of the Pauline epistles, and only 1 manuscript of Revelation. However, the main sources for his text were Codices 2e and 2ap. That's all technical jargon for identifying these manuscripts. Erasmus did not compile his own Greek text from manuscripts. He did not compile his own Greek text from manuscripts at his disposal, few as they were. Instead, codices A2 and A2P themselves served as the printer's copy for all of the New Testament except Revelation. They still contain Erasmus's corrections written between the lines of the text, and occasionally in the margins, which came from the other 4 manuscripts." So understand, okay? So what he's, I'm going to try to just draw what he's saying, okay? He's saying that Erasmus used primarily what?
2
manuscripts, okay? So imagine there being lines of Greek characters on these 2 manuscripts, right? So how many others does he have? He's got 5 other ones, right? So then what he's going to do is he's going to put edits in between the lines, right? Edits in between the lines here, and the edits are coming from his other what? His other 5, and then these 2 principally are the ones he hands to what? The printer. In fact, I need to correct that just quick, okay? This would technically be 4 others, because he only has 1 for what?
Revelation.
Okay, so he's using principally these 2. He's making edits in the margin based upon the readings found in the other 4. He gives these to the printer. So in other words, did Erasmus ever sit down from scratch and write out a complete Greek New Testament?
No.
He is handing to the editor, this is the format that he's using. Okay, is everybody following that? They still contain Erasmus' corrections written between the lines of text and occasionally in the margins, which came from the other 4 manuscripts, okay, though he made little use of them. A comparison between the manuscripts used by the printer and the printed text indicates that the printer did not accept every correction that Erasmus proposed, and that the printer made some revisions not authorized by Erasmus, okay? So everybody with that. So all told then, there are basically 3 reasons why Glennie, and to a lesser degree Combs, deride the Greek text of Erasmus. Firstly, the project was rushed to the press in only 8 months by Erasmus's publisher Froben, and is therefore of suspect quality. So that would be number 1, and that's the amount of what? Time. Okay? Where am I? Secondly, in their view, the Erasmine text is based on only 5 to 7 Greek manuscripts and therefore is not comprehensive enough. And thirdly, working off the assumption that, quote, oldest is best, The Erasmine text is based on a handful of recent late medieval Byzantine manuscripts and is therefore not emblematic of the oldest form of what? The text, right? So that would be our age-old argument that oldest is what?
Best.
And we've talked about that numerous times, and I showed you that that's not a scriptural principle, okay? That the scriptures were being corrupted in the first century while Paul was still writing the New Testament, and just because something is old does not automatically mean it's what? Okay, so here are the three major things. Time, number of manuscripts, and age of what? Manuscripts, okay? So before we move on to look at these individual arguments, does anybody have any questions or comments?
Well, I don't know why they don't add the fifth one, that the printer didn't even take Erasmus edits, and he added his own when he wanted to.
So the printer is the printer influencing this first edition, 1516 edition?
Yeah, and do we know who he is?
Well, we know the publisher is Froben, but we don't know who the typesetter is, or who the compositor is that's actually setting the text, setting the type on the page for the text. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that guy's name. I know the guy who owned the press that published it. His name was Froben. That doesn't mean that he's the guy who's standing there actually setting up the type for the page. Okay? Anything else?
And you don't know the nature of the changes the printer made.
Correct.
It's been just simple typo kind of changes.
Could have been spelling, could have been any, it could have been very significant, or it could have been very what?
Minor,
we don't know. Okay?
Well, we don't know, but it looks like whoever knows how to compare these manuscripts know, according to that last sentence.
Which sentence?
Well, a comparison between manuscripts used by the printed text indicates that the printer, so they know where the printer didn't.
They can compare, yes. If they have these two in front of them,
yes.
They can compare these two with Erasmus's handwritten editions with what was published and know where the publisher influenced the text, or the printer influenced the text, and where the Erasmine, you know, changes were made. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, so let's look first at this. Number one, we're looking at the time element, or what I've called in the notes, the rushed to press argument. Okay? Supporters of the critical text in modern versions often compare the amount of time that Erasmus spent compiling the Greek text with Westcott and Hort in the 19th century. It is commonly asserted that Westcott and Hort spent nearly 30 years editing and compiling their Greek New Testament. Erasmus spent only 8 months. Therefore, on this basis alone, the Westcott and Hort text is of a superior quality to the Erasmine text in the mind of Glennie. Okay? So in other words, it's better because they spent more what? More time. That Erasmus rushed his in 8 months to satisfy his publisher. Westcott and Hort spent more time on it, and so therefore theirs has to be what? Theirs has to be better. Okay? Now I've reached here into the letters of Hort on this to show you what's going on. Okay? So look at the next point. 1853, April 19th. In a letter to the Reverend John Ellerton, Hort announces his joint plan with Westcott to edit a Greek New Testament based upon material provided by Lachmann and Tischendorf. Okay? Now the year there is 1853. Okay? In 1853, has Tischendorf yet discovered the bulk of Codex Sinaiticus? The answer is no. Okay? So 1853, there's an announcement made that W&H are going to produce a what? A Greek New Testament. Okay? W&H is short for who?
Westcott
and Hort. Okay? So here's then I quote the letter. Okay? He and I, that's Westcott, are going to edit a Greek text of the New Testament some 2 or 3 years hence, if possible. So how long does he perceive this is going to take? Okay. Is he like, oh, we're going to do this for 30 years? Okay. Lachmann and Tischendorf will supply rich materials, but not nearly enough, and we hope to do a good deal with the Oriental versions. Now watch this. Our object is to supply clergymen generally, schools, etc., with a portable Greek text which shall not be disfigured with Byzantine, what?
Corruptions.
Corruptions. Okay? So their objective is to produce a text that is not disfigured by Byzantine, I'm just going to abbreviate that, corruptions. So in other words, they are standing against which text?
The Byzantine
text, the Textus Receptus, the one that was available at that point. Okay? Judging from this dated letter, it seems reasonable to conclude that Westcott and Hort began working on their project in 1853, some 28 years before it was published in 1881. Why did it take them so long? The following dated letter from Hort to the Reverend John Ellerton revealed that the discovery of Codex Sinaiticus in 1859 by Constantine Tischendorf greatly delayed the release of Hort's joint project with Westcott, a reality that brought dismay to Hort. So look at the date on this next letter. It's 1859. Okay? 1859, in a letter to Reverend John Ellerton, Hort acknowledges the discovery of Codex Sinaiticus by Tischendorf and expresses Westcott's desire to see it before publishing their Greek New Testament. Is everybody with me so far? This is what he said on the top of page 4, quoting from Letters, Volume 1, Life and Letters, Volume 1. He said, Tischendorf's new discovery may delay our New Testament, what's the next word?
Greatly,
as Westcott wishes, not I, to wait for it, but there be little doubt of its what? Does Hort want to wait? He does not want to wait. Does he think they're ready to move on it in 1859? So, let's just go with that. That would right there be how many years? Does that significantly diminish an argument based on age of nearly 30 years?
Right.
Okay, is everybody with me so far? So, had Tischendorf not discovered... Now, by the way, before I read this, finish reading this, am I purposefully saying nasty things about Westcott and Hort, or am I quoting Hort from his own letters?
Yeah.
Okay. So, had Tischendorf not discovered Codex Sinaiticus in 1859... the Westcott and Hort Greek text would have been available much sooner, perhaps as soon as 1859, a period of only 6 years as opposed to almost 30. Second, none of this discussion touches upon how Westcott and Hort presented an unpublished copy of their Greek New Testament into the 1870 Revision Committee. Okay? In 1870, these two men are on the Revision Committee, and they introduce their Greek New Testament in an unpublished form to the Revision Committee. Okay, is everybody with that? Let me read it again. Second, none of this discussion touches upon how Westcott and Hort presented an unpublished copy of their Greek New Testament into the 1870 Revision Committee a full 10 years before it was published for public consumption. Consequently, it was in use for over a decade before it was published in 1881. It was from this unpublished copy of the Westcott and Hort Greek New Testament that the sweeping textual changes exhibited by the revised version were made. Moreover, to deride Erasmus based upon the amount of time he spent compiling the text for his 1516 edition clouds the true purpose of this edition to present his Latin translation. Furthermore, it overlooks the four later editions in which Erasmus sought to improve his Greek text. Lastly, the delay on account of Tischendorf's discovery changed precious little about Westcott and Hort's text, since nearly 90% of it was based upon the lone witness of Codex Vaticanus. So Hort said in that letter from 1859 that Westcott was the one that wanted the delay, but he didn't want to. Okay. So Erasmus' previous work over a decade earlier on Origen's Hexapla also exposed Erasmus to many more Greek readings than he had in front of him in Bethel in 1515-1516. Remember, we quoted Daniel last week as unwitting preparation for the moment for that moment in the library in 1504. That was when he discovered Valla's annotations. Erasmus had already discovered Jerome, and he had already gone on to study Origen's Hexapla. It is a complete mischaracterization of the facts to imply that the only things that Erasmus had ever seen are these seven copies in vessel, and that whatever he was, however he was editing those things I had drawn up there before, was not based on other knowledge of Greek manuscripts that he had seen previous to 1515. You following me? Any questions? So the whole thing about Westcott and Hort taking 30 years needs really to be a lot more accurate than that. Were they ready to move after six? Yes. Did they bring their copy into the revision committee in 1870 before it was published in 1881? So it's true that it takes them nearly 30 years to get the thing published, but is it used the decade before it's published to revise the New Testament with the revised version, and are they ready to move on it sometime before that, before Tischendorf discovered Codex Sinaiticus in a period that would have only been about how many years? 6 years. Now, don't misunderstand me. It still took Erasmus 8 months, but don't let somebody mischaracterize what's really going on here with Westcott and Hort and say, therefore, well, theirs is better automatically because of the amount of time. You following me?
Mm-hmm.
Any questions? No?
No.
All right, so let's look at the next point then. Moving on to number two. The number of manuscripts. Both Glennie and Combs charge the Erasmine text with being incomplete since it is only based on seven Greek manuscripts. Both of these men maintain that one must consult the totality of the manuscript witnesses in order to produce a comprehensive Greek text. Some of their objections appear to have been anticipated by the Greek. That's wrong. I need to change that sentence. They were anticipated by the 19th century defender of the traditional Greeks. We need to remove the word Greek. John William Bergen. Bergen says, quote, "If the objection be made, as it probably will be, do you then mean to rest upon the five manuscripts used by Erasmus? I reply that the copies employed were selected because they were known to represent the accuracy of the sacred word, that the decision of the text was evidently guarded with jealous care, just as the human genealogy of our Lord was preserved, that it rests mainly upon much the widest testimony, and that where any part of it conflicts with the fullest evidence attainable, there I believe that it calls for correction." What is Bergen saying? He's saying that these five or seven are emblematic and representative of the vast what? Majority of the other ones that are available to consult. Okay? So did Bergen over 100 years ago anticipate the objection based upon the number of manuscripts? Okay? Now, in other words, Glennie leaves one with the impression that Erasmus had never seen a Greek manuscript before he came to Bessel in 1514. This notion is absurd, given all we have studied about the life and career of Erasmus. Even Combs is forced to admit it. Quote, "Besides the seven previously mentioned manuscripts that Erasmus used in Bessel for his Greek text, his annotationes indicate that he had examined and collated a few other manuscripts in his various travels. One of these can be identified with certainty as Codex 69, a 15th century manuscript of the entire New Testament with minor gaps. In a few places, Erasmus selected distinctive readings from this manuscript." So, is it a mischaracterization to say that Erasmus didn't know anything about the Greek New Testament beyond the seven manuscripts that he finds at Bessel? That would be a massive mischaracterization of Erasmus's work. I've already proved to you that a decade before, is he aware of Origen's Hexapla, and would he have been exposed to even more readings there? Okay? So on this point, Dr. Edward F. Hills, author of the King James Version Defended, weighs in with the following. He says, quote, "Did Erasmus use other manuscripts besides these five in preparing the Textus Receptus? The indications are that he did. It is well known also that Erasmus looked for manuscripts everywhere during his travels, and then he borrowed them from everyone he could. Hence, although the Textus Receptus was based mainly on the manuscripts that Erasmus found at Wesel, it also included readings taken from others to which he had access. It agreed with the common faith because it was founded on manuscripts which in the providence of God were readily available. Okay? So in other words, has he seen more than these seven?
Yes.
Yes. Okay? And if he's seeing them, if they're available to him, does that mean they were out amongst the people and he could have access to them?
Yeah.
Are they locked away in a library in the Vatican?
No.
Are they hidden under a rock or a stone somewhere in the Sinai Desert? No. They're out there for people to what? Read or have access to, assuming they know how to read Greek. And remember, how did they get there? How did they get into Europe? They got in there principally through the ministry of the Pauline, and then through the fall of Constantinople, scholars fleeing and bringing these things over into Europe. Okay? So there's no doubt that Erasmus knew of and had inspected more Greek manuscripts on his journeys than what were available to him at Wesel in 1514 to 1516. The Wesel texts are emblematic of a host of other manuscripts found in the Byzantine majority that are in substantive agreement with each other and are represented in printed fashion through the Textus Receptus, of which the Erasmine edition was the first. In this way, the TR, first published by Erasmus, bears the hallmarks of the preserved text in that it is witnessed by a multiplicity of copies that were available and in use by the body of Christ during the dispensation of grace. Okay? Now notice that I am not interjecting into this the same providential argument that Hills did. Okay? The point is, the seven that he had access to in Wesel, are they emblematic of literally thousands of others that were in substantive agreement with the seven that he used? Yes. Okay? Therefore, Glennie's charge that Erasmus produced a new Greek text, which had never existed before, is only accurate when viewed through the assumption of verbatim identicality. While it is true that Erasmus was practicing textual criticism when he edited his text, he did so using manuscripts that were in substantive agreement with literally thousands of other witnesses that he could have used. Put another way, Erasmus utilized manuscripts to which the biblical principles of preservation attested, namely multiplicity, availability, and use, not some manuscripts that were hidden away in an inaccessible library or were not even known to exist for another 350 years. Lastly, unless Erasmus had access to a complete manuscript of the New Testament, which he did not, how else was he supposed to print the New Testament in Greek in its entirety if he did not edit a text for publication? You following that? Here they're criticizing him for doing what?
Editing
it. Well, what is... Yes, he is editing it. We have to admit this, right? But what is he editing it from? He's editing it from manuscripts that are emblematic of the hallmarks of what you would expect to find from preservation, okay? And the only way he's going to have or print the entire New Testament in Greek is if he uses what's available to him to put it together. You following that? Okay? So where am I at? Lastly, unless Erasmus had access to a complete manuscript of the New Testament, which he did not, how else was he supposed to print the New Testament in Greek in its entirety if he did not edit a text for publication? Such reasoning on the part of critical text advocates is suspect at best, since their textual darling, Codex Vaticanus, does not contain the complete New Testament. It is missing 1 and 2 Timothy and Titus. Yet 90% of the modern critical text is based upon its witness. You see the games that are played here. Okay? They're criticizing Erasmus for editing a text. Because he didn't have a full New Testament text in front of him, right? But what are they doing? Are they editing a text based upon largely an incomplete New Testament? Yet Erasmus has to be a bad guy or wrong or whatever you want to say because he did the same thing they're doing. You with me? The objection that Erasmus' 1516 Greek New Testament was flawed because he only used seven Greek manuscripts is seriously dubious when one considers the position of the folks asserting it. We have already observed in previous lessons that the modern critical text is based principally on only two Greek manuscripts, Codex Vaticanus and Codex Sinaiticus. Recall the following from lesson 73, quote, They usually gave primary weight to one Greek manuscript B, known as Vaticanus, even when every other Egyptian and Byzantine manuscript supports a different reading. Though there are 5,262 Greek manuscripts currently extant and tens of thousands of early versions, the following manuscripts carried the most weight in the United Bible Society text, or the modern critical text. Look at point number one. 90% of the time, these editors base their reading on the primary weight of only one Greek manuscript, Codex Vaticanus. In practical terms, this manuscript is the authority. So guys that are in favor of that text are ripping on Erasmus for this when their text is based primarily on the weight of how many witnesses? One. Okay, go to page 6. Another 7% of the time, their disagreement with the majority text is based on the reading from Sinaiticus. We have already seen that Sinaiticus disagrees with Vaticanus well over 3,000 times in the Gospels alone. This shows that one or both of these manuscripts are highly unreliable. 2.5% of the time, their distinctive reading is based on Alexandrinus. Less than 0.5% of the time, the readings of modern versions are based on other Alexandrian manuscripts when one or more of them disagree with the previous three. And that's from Kaiser and Pickering's book that we went through. Okay, in his book, Which Greek Text? Let's back up. I want to make sure we understand this. Okay, so are the guys who are criticizing the Erasmine text for only being reliant on seven manuscripts, do they turn around and advocate for the critical text, which is based principally in 90% on one manuscript, and another 7% and 2.5% on two? So it's based principally on how many manuscripts?
Two.
One and a half. Two, maybe a third, 2.5% of the time, right? Yeah, what are they saying about Erasmus?
Not too
many,
but too little.
Okay. Do you see the duplicitous nature of this sort of reasoning? Okay. In his book, Which Greek Text? The Debate Among Fundamentalists, Dr. Charles L. Surratt states the following in response to the objections raised by Glennie and company. He says, quote, "It appears to this author that the opponents of Erasmus and the Textus Receptus textual traditions are," I think that should say tradition, I need to check that, "textual tradition are criticizing Erasmus for doing what they themselves are doing." Textual criticism. How odd that they would make such an issue of the small number of manuscripts used by that editor when they follow a position that espouses the minority of extant manuscripts as superior today. Had Erasmus' few manuscripts disagreed with that which local churches were using, there would be reason to reject his work. But if he purposely chose the text that best represent the church's traditions, the results seem legitimate. You following that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So we've dealt with the time element. We've dealt with the number of manuscripts element. Anybody have a question before we move on to the age of the manuscripts? I'm just going to say it this way. What you're reading here in these notes is, I've not read anything that is quite exactly like what I'm saying in these notes. Okay? I'm trying to offer reasonable responses to these criticisms that are raised. Okay? So, the next one would be the age of the manuscripts and an awareness of variant readings. Another objection to the Erasmine text that is commonly raised by modern supporters of the critical text is that textual discoveries since the early 16th century, have uncovered the existence of variant readings that were unknown to Erasmus. Okay? Now, let's just stop there for a second. Is it true that since 1516, more Greek manuscripts have been made aware to folks than we knew about in 1516?
Yeah.
Obviously, that's true. Okay? Put another way, Erasmus's Greek New Testament is antiquated and not based upon the most recent research in the field of textual criticism. Okay? Codex Vaticanus, which I think is spelled wrong. Is it?
Yeah.
Codex Vaticanus, or B, the principal manuscript upon which the critical text is based, was not even known to exist until the late 15th century. Okay? We have no record anywhere of anybody having any awareness of this until in 1481 it is logged in the Vatican Library. Okay? 1481 Codex Vaticanus, or B, is registered in the Vatican Library in Rome, and this is its first known existence. Okay? It is not in the 1475 catalog, even though it has been reported to have been so. Okay? And as I've already said, it's missing the pastoral epistles. Okay? So the darling of modern textual criticism is not a complete New Testament. Yet what are they ripping on Erasmus for? Using manuscripts that weren't a complete what? New Testament. Okay? Dr. Hills points out that Erasmus was fully aware of most of the principal textual variants of consequence discussed by modern textual critics. He says, quote, "Through his study of the writings of Jerome and other church fathers, Erasmus became well informed concerning the variant readings of the New Testament text. Indeed, almost all the important variants known to scholars today were already known to Erasmus more than 460 years ago and discussed in the notes which he placed after the text in his editions of the Greek New Testament. Here, for example, Erasmus dealt with such problem passages as the conclusion of the Lord's Prayer, Matthew 6:13, the interview of the rich young man with Jesus, Matthew 17, the ending of Mark, the angelic song, the woman taken in adultery, and the mystery of godliness. So is Erasmus aware of all those, and is he discussing them in his annotations? In his notes, Erasmus placed before the reader not only ancient discussions concerning the New Testament text, but also debates which took place in the early Christian church over the New Testament canon and the authorship of some of the New Testament books, especially Hebrews, James, 2 Peter, 2 and 3 John, Jude, and Revelation. Not only did he mention the doubts reported by Jerome and other church fathers, but also added some objections of his own. However, he discussed these matters somewhat warily, declaring himself willing at any time to submit to the consensus of public opinion, especially to the authority of the church. So the point here is this. Does Erasmus know about almost all of the principal textual variants in the early 1500s when he edits his Greek New Testament? Okay? There is also historical evidence that Erasmus knew about the existence of Codex Vaticanus B in his lifetime and rejected it as corrupt. In 1521, Erasmus is supplied with a transcript of 1 John 4, 1-3, and 1 John 5, 5-11, from B by his friend Bombastius. Now, what reading of very substantive significance is found in 1 John 5, 5-11? That would be the three heavenly witnesses. Right? Erasmus is supplied with a transcript from B by his friend Bombastius. Note that 1 John 5:7 is missing from Codex B. Okay? B is rejected by Erasmus as corrupt. In other words, Erasmus doesn't accept it. In 1534, a series of letters between Erasmus and his friend, how do you say this? Sepulveda, discuss various aspects of Codex B. Sepulveda mentions 365 readings. The exact list of readings has not survived history, but Erasmus views B as part of a medieval move on the part of the Council of Florence from 1431 to 1499 to conform Greek manuscripts to the Latin Vulgate. Okay? So is Erasmus aware of almost all the principal variant readings that people argue about today?
Yes.
The end of Mark, the woman taken in adultery, First Timothy chapter 3, the mystery of godliness, all these, most of these principal ones he's aware of. He's aware of the existence of B. He's aware of certain things about it, and he rejects B as a medieval edit on the part of the Catholic Church to conform it to the Vulgate. Okay? So Erasmus was aware of nearly every major variant regarding the New Testament, yet he never adjusted his Greek text to cohere with Codex B. Recall from lesson 100 that Erasmus also did an extensive study on the Church Fathers as part of his desire to revive biblical literacy. Therefore, his rejection of B as a medieval move to conform Greek manuscripts with the Latin Vulgate was based on his knowledge of the Greek manuscripts and possibly the Church what? Fathers. Okay? So, in my opinion, the arguments that are put forth to deride Erasmus and to criticize the traditional Greek text upon which all of the Reformation translations are based on, to me, is suspect, highly suspect at best. Okay, I think there are reasonable answers for all three of the major objections, including the one about editing. Now think about this. Westcott Hort edited a text based upon essentially how many documents, how many manuscripts?
Basically three.
Okay? One of which is not known to exist, has no provenance, no history. There is zero history of Codex Vaticanus or Codex Sinaiticus ever having been copied or used for anything. Okay? None. So are they editing a text? Do they themselves edit a text? They edit a text based upon how many documents? Three. And if their text is correct, their text is so wholly different from anything the body of Christ had ever seen for nearly the first 1900 years of their existence. The Latin Vulgate is more like the traditional text and the King James Bible than it is like the Westcott and Hort text. Does the Latin Vulgate have 1 John 5:7? Yeah. Does the Latin Vulgate have Mark 16? Yeah. It has we already looked at this previous. Many of those major variants the Vulgate what? Had. Okay? Now, somebody's going to write me and they're going to say, well, what you're doing is you're advocating for the Vulgate. No, I'm not. I'm just saying that we have to be accurate about what the case is. You cannot just say the Vulgate's bad because it was, you know, had its origin in Catholicism. You have to evaluate the Vulgate based upon the readings that are actually found where? In it. Okay? But if you're going to... So yes, Erasmus to a degree is the editing this. The only way he's going to produce a Greek New Testament in print is if he what? Edits it. You with that? Okay? So, in 1522, and we're working our way through this, in 1522, Luther is going to translate the second edition of Erasmus into what language? German. In 1526, William Tyndale is going to translate, I think it's still the second edition, it might be the third, he's going to translate the second or third edition of Erasmus into what language?
English.
And you're going to have the first printed English Bible. Did Wycliffe come before, a few hundred years before, but his was hand what? His was handwritten and it was a translation of what?
The Vulgate.
Okay? Tyndale's going to translate the Erasmine Greek into English in 1526. Alright? Now I know this is a lot of stuff. I know it's a lot of technical stuff, a lot of stuff to maybe keep straight. I'm trying to put this across the plate in a way that you guys can hit it hit, you know, under, get it and understand what's going on here. Okay? So I think Erasmus, I saw a website, a reading that had been written just this week. I sent it to Craig about the end of the book of Revelation and whether or not Erasmus was really back translating Latin. And they were making the argument that he didn't, and that there was another edition of Greek that was out there called the Adeline edition, and that he, that the Greek was supplied for the end of the book of Revelation by that edition, which was being worked on in Italy. Really interesting article. I'm still processing what it might, may or may not mean. But I think that there are a lot of things said about Erasmus, about the Textus Receptus, about the traditional Greek that are not necessarily fair or accurate. Okay? All right. We actually done a few minutes early. Anybody have any questions?
Well, Alex? Curiosity. So when Westcott Park decided to go and put their scriptures together, they went to the Latin Vulgate?
No.
They did.
They went. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, I'm just wondering, do they have to physically, because if we talked about, you know, being the Vulgate, that's in Rome, in the Catholic Church, do they let people in?
I think you're getting the Vulgate and the Vatican is confused.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Thank you.
There was a, in the 15, in the 1830s, there was an edition of the, of, there was an edition of, Codex Vaticanus that was published by the Catholic Church in the 1800s. Okay? I have all that documentation at home. I actually have a copy of it, a digital copy of it, that I pulled off the internet in PDF form. Okay? It was done, I want to say, by Cardinal Mai. And it was published around the time that these guys would have been working on it. And I don't, the exact year escapes me. But he was, they were working on it when Tischendorf first went to the Vatican in the 1830s. He visited with Cardinal Mai and he was able to look at Vaticanus for like a few hours under strict supervision because the Cardinal was working on establishing a printed edition of it. Okay? I just saw a question come up. Coverdale is going to come after in the 1530s. Okay? Tyndale's never going to put the whole Bible into English. He finishes the New Testament in 1526. In the 1530s, he starts working on the Old Testament. He gets the Pentateuch done. He gets the first five books of the Old Testament done. And then he is betrayed by, he's betrayed into the hands of the authorities, after which they burn him at the stake as a heretic for putting the Bible into English. Okay? After him, some of his associates, most notably Coverdale, is going to be the first one to put the whole Bible into the whole Bible, Old and New Testaments, into print in a printed form. Okay? But anyway, did I answer your question?
Yeah.
So these guys have access to Vaticanus in the 1800s through a printed edition. And it's interesting, who else prints an edition? Tischendorf. Tischendorf prints editions of both Vaticanus and Sinaiticus.
Didn't he go to Russia to get?
Yes, remember that when he goes in 1859 to try to remove it, he goes as an official emissary of the Russian government. Remember this? And he promises that he'll, you know, bring the codex back and this and that, and he has to take, he takes it back with him to, it ends up in St. Petersburg. In the Royal Library of the Russians until it is sold to the British in the 1830s. Yeah, right now it's in the British Museum. Okay, we've been over some of that stuff before. Any other questions or comments? I hope this is all making sense to you. Okay, now next Sunday is December 1st. Craig Nelson is going to be teaching December 1st. Okay, I'm traveling this week to visit my parents for Thanksgiving, and I'm not going to have time necessary to put one of these lessons together because we're going to be out of town. We'll be back for church, but I'm not going to be teaching this class. He's going to teach the class, and then we're going to resume this the following Sunday, which I believe is like December 8th or something like that, and we're going to look at then the reception of Erasmus's Greek text, and then look at the various editions of what happens with it once it's in print. And then from there, we'll start looking, I'm going to teach a whole lesson on Luther and the German Bible, and then we'll start looking at Tyndall and the English New Testament. Okay? Any questions? All right. The war will be done early. Imagine that.